For July the 1st, 2022, we talk about Before Your Eyes, Elec Head, Monster Hunter Rise, and much more. Welcome to Level 420. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I am David Meinsmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. It's 420, the funny number. It's one of the funny numbers.
Oh, I forgot to get edibles for the show.
I mean, I've got some literally lying right here, but...
I've got some in the freezer.
Am I the only one who's tripping balls right now?
Do it. No. Dennis planned ahead.
Yeah. Oh man, I don't know. Maybe if this episode was recorded 5 years earlier, probably. But right now, no, I'm good. I'll take my water.
Hypothetical question for the day: what would be the best game to play on edibles?
My main go-to is Tetris Effect, although VR Google Maps or Google Earth is a fucking, yeah, that's good. Yeah, especially if there's one for Oculus or whatever called like Wander or something like that, where you can cycle an area back in time. You know, because the Google Map, like the Google timeline. Maps car. Yeah. Well, you know, say like, okay, do you want to see this in like 2020? Do you want to see it in 2017, et cetera? And so like, I'll go back to familiar places and then just like time warp. Here's the tree year by year, the tree in front of my old college house growing.
That just to me sounds like a recipe for disaster. Like,
it's actually weirdly comforting.
Oh, see, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that was back when I had hope.
That's
my answer. You got to go Google Maps hunting, where you go try to look for the weird stuff that shows up in the periphery.
Yeah. Well, you're always looking for faces and people doing weird stuff, but yeah, that's my answer. I don't know if anybody else has any answers.
The optimal is Let's Plays.
Yeah.
And do you hold the controller like you're playing along?
Yes.
like you're the little brother.
Yep.
you little brother yourself.
Yeah.
No, my horrible idea for things to do while on edibles is to watch Cats on Netflix.
Oh no. Oh no.
Did they let that on Netflix?
I think you have to sign
Stray
a waiver.
Cats.
Yeah.
Anyway, how you doing, Dennis?
I'm good. So usually you have the power washing stories, but this week I have the power washing
story. Oh, what'd you power wash? What'd you do?
I've got the power washing. I did our back patio. Just over time it's a brick patio, but it's just gotten covered in moss and grime and assorted debris from being, outside. Mm-hmm. So tonight I was like, all right, let's do it. I'm going all the way. So I actually started by raking.
Enough
big crap that needed raking. Then I went over it with a leaf blower, kind of got out all the debris I'd loosened up. Then I went over it with a weed whacker because the shit growing through the bricks was that bad.
Yeah.
So then after that, of course, I had to do the leaf blower again. Mm-hmm. And then the pièce de résistance, the power washer.
Okay, did you use a spray nozzle, or did you use one of those that's like a vacuum kind of thing where it gets it like right down on it?
No, I use a spray nozzle.
Okay.
And I tried going for the fan because I was like, I'll go kind of quick and just go over to get the dirt off.
You're not going to save any time. You're going to have to go back over it so many times.
Yeah. So the laser sniper setting, to go to war with this moss that was grown up between everything.
Mm-hmm.
And there is nothing more satisfying than kind of carving out all this stuff, taking the grout in out from between the bricks. But there is a surprising amount of splash damage.
Yeah, there's some unaccountable angles there. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you're trying to get in between these bricks, and that's that's gonna you know, splash stuff back up. So I looked like I was at the end of like a Nickelodeon, you know, slime challenge or something by the time I was done with that.
Nice.
But I mean, the real question is, weren't you?
Yeah. I felt like it. I felt like I had won too.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's good times.
What you gonna do? Hit that masonry with some Roundup and then sweep some sand into it? Or
that would be ideal. What I realized at the end was I wanted a nice big push broom to get all the chunks and everything while it was still wet, kind of move that to the side. Mm-hmm. And we have successfully snapped the handle of three different push brooms.
Oh, it's
on
inevitable.
Prior dates.
It's inevitable.
Yeah. So I was push broomless, and I wasn't about to, like, you know, I was having fun, but I wasn't ready to get down on my hands and knees and just push with the head of the push broom. So
no,
I was like,
maniac behavior.
Yeah, I'll come back to it. So it is intermission on the patio beautifying, and we'll come back with you know, I think something similar to what you're describing, but probably with a new push broom. But
see,
I think
what you want is hickory handle.
Yeah, there it is. There it is. Well, it doubles as a switch if the boys get out of line.
I mean, hey, you know, you do you. Actually, no.
Yeah, no, don't do that. But I think that makes it so the rake, the leaf blower, the weed whacker, the power washer, and then eventually the broom. Five different pool tools for, like, I don't know, a 25 square foot area. I felt pretty accomplished.
Yeah. Oh, wait, guys, one second. Sorry, I need to. And yeah, no, that's all the listeners. They're gone. Last one just tuned out.
So how do we really feel?
No, I could have this conversation all day. So,
So yeah, I've been to power washing.
Nice. I have not been a power washing. I've been, we talked about politics stuff before. I've been in a state, you know, and that's about as far as I'll go.
To be fair, you've at least been in a state that, you know, doesn't have.
No, we do. We, yeah, oh, do it's, you? It's fucked.
You have okay. a second degree burn and not a third degree burn. You should feel thankful.
Yeah, it's fucked. It's fucked here. Yeah.
Yep.
Don't want to go too far into that. People can probably guess how I feel. Just a bunch of getting ready this coming weekend. Oh, here's the thing. I'm not going to be able to record next week because of the holiday stuff. I've got family things.
Aha.
Yeah.
What holiday?
The 4th.
Okay.
And it's like celebrating a birthday for a friend you don't talk to anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, no, I'm going to be doing stuff with the family. No show next week.
Will it involve fireworks?
One night will. So my house has the best view of the fireworks in my city. Not the, like the best. There's probably somebody who's got like a crazy good view, but like I'm the perfect distance away.
A good view.
Yeah, it looks like the fireworks just like blow up right above my house.
So one of my greatest life accomplishments is when I was in New York watching fireworks from the roof of the high rise and being able to see 5 different fireworks shows at the same time.
Badass.
Ooh, excellent.
Yeah. No, so I'll be hosting family over, which is the one time a year that my backyard gets any use outside of me mowing it every week. So
you've been planning for this moment.
You mow it every week?
Give or take. See, when you mow, you don't want to take off more than a third of the total length of the blade. Otherwise, it stunts the growth and you get extensive browning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We lost all the listeners. Now we're starting to lose co-hosts.
Wah, 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 wah.
Oh, man. David, how about you? What's going on?
Not a whole lot. I went to this past weekend was the... local Trans Pride festival.
Oh, sweet.
So yeah, that was a lot of fun. You know, a lot of the various like LGBTQ groups, you know, support organizations all had mm-hmm. tent set up, and there was a actually pretty kick-ass drag show.
Yeah.
So there were apparently a couple of protesters that showed up, which kind of sucks. Yeah, but apparently, it was three people, and apparently before I got there, they had like actually come into the festival grounds, and so like the cops got called and came and like, you know, took care of things.
Good.
But then, you know, after that, we're just kind of, you know, hanging around. Yeah. But apparently, like, everyone I talked to, they're like, oh, yeah, these, like, same three people are come to every single event remotely like this and are the only people that come to the events to, like, counter protest.
Look, so. It's their kink. Leave them alone.
Yeah. Oh, good on them to have a hobby, though.
Yeah, yeah. So it ended up the local like someone campaigning for the local Democratic candidate for I think House was there with just one of those huge kind of banner style signs and just proceeded to just stand in front of the dude with the megaphone until he left.
Badass.
So. The other, and this is just dumb, but I enjoyed it, is I got a giant flag that's the Gadsden flag, the Don't Tread on Me flag, except in rainbow colors. So yeah,
I'm taking it back about that. Civil libertarian.
Actually, when I was in Toledo a couple weeks ago, we were walking around a neighborhood and I saw the best flag, which was the Don't Tread on Me snake with a MAGA hat and a ball gag, and it said tread on me daddy.
Oh god. And I miss going to Pride stuff. Last one I went to was in 2015, which was like down in Cincinnati, and it was like the exact day or maybe the day after it was a Saturday, so it was a day after the Obergefell verdict was handed out. Like fucking crazy. It was real cool. Like it was a real it was a real cool scene. Yeah. I don't know. Well, I'm happy you had a good time.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Nice. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I also went to a celebration over the weekend, but it was a different kind. I went to a midsummer party in Portland. I think I mentioned that last week.
This has been hyped.
Yeah, I always enjoy doing this. I think this is like the third or fourth time I've gone, so it's becoming a tradition. But it's really nice. It's hosted by our two friends who are from Sweden, and so they do a lot of work and like prep a really nice meal, and then they have this like Swedish liquor, and they'll give you like these tiny like half ounce shot glasses, and you sing like a Swedish song and take a shot like three or four times throughout the night. So it's a lot of fun.
Nice.
Yeah, apparently Sweden goes much harder though, where it's like people drink until like sunrise the next day and then are like hungover the rest of the weekend. So
it sounds like Europe.
We only made it to 2 a.m so we're a few hours shorter, but
yeah,
I mean, technically, you made it the whole day.
Yeah, and like since I went to Portland that morning, I woke up at like 5 in the morning, so I did have a nice day of celebration, but it was a lot of fun. So, yeah,
not bad. Yeah.
And then it was also like hot as fuck in the Pacific Northwest. It was in the 90s instead of the hundreds though, like last year. So I actually got home at a semi reasonable hour instead of having a like 6 hour train ride. So
So like there just wasn't a lot of like traffic on the way up
train wise. When it gets to a certain temperature, the rails expand, and so the train has to go like a certain speed. Like so when it gets to the hundreds, like they can only go 40 miles per hour or like less. So
yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The warming done broke our trains.
Yeah, we didn't account for it. Well, before I get more depressed thinking about that, that sounds like some banter. So I think that we should, talk about the regular kind of stuff, the games we've been playing, whatnot, doing a regular kind of show, like on segments, like with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Can I go first? I've got a new one, but it's short. It's small. Yeah. It's kind of a snack. I have been playing this really cute game called Elekhead.
Okay. Elekhead.
So think like electric head, E-L-E-C-H-E-A-D.
Okay, that feels like it should be a better portmanteau than it actually is.
Yeah, I think that it works better when you read it as opposed to when you say it out loud. I didn't quite know how to approach pronouncing it.
Like, can you do tricks in the game? Because then you could just do electrics, and that would be
no. It's
I bet you changed the name. I'm saying that's I'll call him. I'll tell him. It's okay.
This is it's a very lightweight, independent puzzle platformer. That is made by, I think this might be the developer's name, Nama Takahashi. Let's see here. Yeah. You play as this, so there's no text, there's no story or anything. Just the lights have gone out in this Mega Man style city, kind of place. And you play a plucky little robot with a battery for a head who has to put the lights back on. When I say lightweight little puzzle platformer, like maybe to a fault, it is not especially challenging, but it is just enough of like a, order of operations puzzle. And the jump feels just good enough in your hands that, it is, you know, engaging, to play around with. So the idea and the gimmick of it is because his head is electrified, anything that his head touches or that his body touches while his head is attached gets electrified and therefore activated. So like
that minor print of the sentence while his head is attached is a very scary description.
Well, it goes in some grim directions in the later half. No, not really. That'll be important for what I say later. So like, say you're running up to this gap, but you see an outline for some blocks. If you run over the blocks that are attached to those outlines, it will activate and suddenly that is solid. But if while you're standing on top of the solid blocks that, you know, were activated by the power, it disconnects the power and then you fall through them. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? And that's kind of the basic order there. It gets complicated by the fact that shortly into the game, you get the ability to throw your head and continue to have your cute little stubby body run around without the head attached. The idea
sounds
being
kind of horrifying, not gonna lie.
You have 10 seconds to get back to your head or else both of you explode.
Oh no,
just like humans.
Humans for the 10 second rule. Yeah. Invented during the French Revolution, 10 second rule. But, you know, the idea being that, you know, sometimes the things you activate are traps. So you want to throw your head kind of across them and then very quickly navigate around to get back to your head on the other side of it. Again, this is puzzle solving. So like describing the exact mechanics of it would give away puzzle solutions. And it's already not a very difficult game. Has a very cute 8-bit aesthetic, limited color palette. And it's just like got some real cute, neat little puzzle ideas. And I'm about like halfway through it right now. And I want to see the rest of it. Just one of those things that's like, I don't know. I saw it on sale on Switch in the eShop. I think normally it's $10 and I got it for like $8. And it is almost exactly what I needed, which is something real lightweight that I could just like plug away at while I listen to something else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The aesthetic does look like straight out of the late 80s, early 90s, like Nintendo era games. So it looks really good. I have some questions.
Okay.
So are both halves of his body electrified when you separate the head from the body?
Just the head.
Okay, and then is either like invulnerable when you separate, or can they both still be killed by like things?
So I haven't run into enemies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's entirely at least as far as I've gotten, again halfway through, it's entirely environmental puzzles. Okay. You know, and if your body dies, you know, there's nothing to pick up your head, so I assume it will explode. The checkpointing is very it's very generous though.
Okay, yeah. Like it'll. Because, I mean, it looks like it's like level, you go from like level to level. So like they'll do checkpointing within the level too.
Yeah. Yeah. So the levels are kind of like, there's kind of like a, think like maybe a third of the way from Mega Man to Metroid. And the like the scale of complexity, there are secrets that you can get to if you can like figure, like, you know, look at the edge of the screen and say, oh, I could probably get down there if I just change the order that I did my throws and jumps. You can do that, and there are like little collectibles and stuff you can get. So it is not like a strict, you know, like really old style computer game where it's, you know, each screen is a board kind of deal. There is a little bit of like interconnectedness to it.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, I feel pretty good about this. I saw it, you know, saw somebody like post about it on Twitter, and I was like, oh yeah, this is almost like perfect for what it is, you know? And I think that for what it is really important. That's an important qualifier. But yeah, it kind of knows what it wants to be and explores its concepts, pretty well. And it's charming as heck when it does it. It's got a real like limited color palette, Mega Man kind of look to it.
Yeah, super cool.
Yeah.
How long would you guess the, well, actually, this isn't the world record speedrun, but there, I've already found a speedrun of it that is 3 minutes and 39 seconds.
No speedrun surprises me. Either comically long or comically short, nothing surprises me. So, yeah, nice, modest little product that I am enjoying. Any other questions about a Leckhead?
No, this is what I want from indie games, is just like a really cool idea. Give me some, you know, like experiment with it for just long enough and then, you know, say thank you, good night.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give me endless replayability. Don't give me, infinitely replayable programmatic, whatever, you know, this is exactly what I want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
I dig it. Well, Dennis, since you talked, I'm going to go to you next.
Oh no.
That's what you get for talking.
That'll show me. No, I have been playing more Dad of Boy.
So, okay.
More God of War, and it continues to be good. I am the combat is growing on me, and I never thought I would say that a God of War game, the stories and the characters are what's driving me forward.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of the situation I'm in. I've started getting side quests and exploring those has been fun. So I guess I'm a little bit off rails for the first time, and I like the feeling of that change, because you kind of pop into a spot and there's combat there, and then you pop into the next spot and there's combat there. And so the groove of the game feels better when you're open world exploring than when you're on rails.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is funny, because it is very clear that the on rails, you know, bespoke levels, I guess, are very cinematic and directed. So it's odd that for all that effort, I still just like derping around the world more.
Yeah.
Where exactly are you right now?
So I've gone to the first realm and come back, and I'm bopping around Midgar now. And like, okay. I said, that's when you start getting a bunch of side quests.
Yeah.
Wait, is this God of War, or is this Final Fantasy VII?
Heyo.
Yeah, the comparison is apt. It's just that the element of it is not 70 hours in or whatever. yeah.
So you got to the mountain and you have activated the bridge.
I have gotten to, I think it's the Black Breath that was blocking me.
Okay.
And I had to go back, activate whatever the world gate thing is, which is a weirdly sci-fi feeling, like the gate between realms that they do. It feels like uber, I don't know, Star Trek-y or something.
Stargate-y?
Yeah, Stargate-y.
you can tell they took a little bit of they took some cues from Marvel Thor, is kind of what it reminded me of.
Yeah, I don't hate it. It just feels weird. It is, you know... Knowing God of War of yore, God of yore, anyone? it's very, very tonally different in every way. So, that keeps on showing up as I continue to play, and that the shock has not worn off, I guess is the way to say it. It's not a bad shock. It's just like you're constantly like, oh my God, this is this is in the same universe. Like this is, this is the same. Like there's some connectivity to the previous games. I can't like what? But yeah, enjoying it. Probably the other reason I like bopping around the open world is because they have the little, you know, travel segments where they just have conversations as you're rowing around in a boat. And they I'm in the middle of them kind of playing around with the fact that Kratos is horrible at telling stories. and just like, you know, telling the story of the tortoise and the hare in the most like reductive, you know, flat way, with all the, you know, as if it was a tactical manual for how to defeat the tortoise. which is excellent. And just, you know, lots of great little character moments like that. So I've enjoyed rowing around for that reason as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think as I've unlocked more and more of the combat tree, I think the combat is growing on me. It is starting to feel distinct from your Souls-like combat in more action gamey ways.
No.
And so, you know, while they've pushed heavy and light attacks over to R1 and R2, it's starting to feel more like an action game that you're playing rather than that they've relegated it to that kind of RPG style.
Yeah. You're still doing combos is the thing.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted though, you know, and it didn't start out feeling that way. And maybe I was just too lazy about going in and buying new skills or what have you, but you know, and it's still a little light compared to what I remember in the God of War games, but it's starting to feel more rounded out.
Yeah.
And that's good.
It's certainly less flashy.
Definitely less flashy. The grab kills are fun and visceral. And so they've retained that, you know, really when you kill an enemy, you want to get them stunned to where you can, it almost feels like Doom, you know, where mm-hmm. you can, you know, do a melee finisher on them. In which, you know, heads get stomped and people get ripped in half and all, and, you know, just God of War things.
It's always with the jaws with these guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone's key weakness, I guess. So that's God of War. Any other thoughts or questions on that? I'll check in on it again as I progress, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And then we are to the end of the Trackmania season. So I am back into gotta get the author time on all tracks mode.
So that means, so the author time is like what the author has said. Yeah, this is a reasonable time for it, or.
Yeah, it's like a secret highest level medal. So, that, you know, there's bronze, silver, and gold, and those are listed in the game. And then if you go fast enough, you get an author medal, which is not listed in the game. Like it shows up nowhere in the interface until you get it, and then it will, you know, show you the time. So anyone who plays the game, like you look up the list of author medals, or you have an add-on that will show you the author time. So it feels kind of silly that they, you know, they don't list it, just because anyone who's familiar with the game you know, knows about it and has a workaround to continue or to be able to see it.
Yeah, to expose it.
Yeah. Yeah, but I will say I will never forget the first time I got an author medal, and it was when I didn't know that they existed. and that feels really, really good. Like, so I can understand why they do it, purely for the new player who gets to have that experience of like, oh my God, it goes to 11. Like that's pretty rad. Oh, good.
You got a medal that was so unexpected that like they had to take a yogurt cap and, you know, the foil top for a yogurt and like scrawl. Use permanent marker to scroll number one on it and hand it to you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, number zero. Yeah, it's great. And for me, the experience was especially good because, my first Trackmania game was Trackmania Turbo, which is kind of like, you know, this weird offshoot. It was primarily on consoles, of the series, mm-hmm. but they had an announcer in it that like would scream his head off when you got the author time. I think they called it Trackmaster in that game. They've always got different names, but it's like, you're the Trackmaster! And you just, lose your mind. It's excellent. So, nice. Yeah, I had some fun with that. But yeah, I've got two tracks left to get author time on. It's the 24th and 25th of a 25 track campaign. So that is staring me in the face, and I've got two more days to knock them out.
Nice.
So wish me luck. I think the last time we talked about this, you know, it's one of those like, you know, how long are you going to be working on it? And, you know, until it's done, until the war's over.
Yeah. I'd wish you Godspeed, but I don't want you to fly off the side of the track. So God maneuverability.
That's right.
Yeah.
God drift. Yeah. God drift. Yes.
Drift.
God drift to you. Yeah. So that's me. That's what I've been playing.
Cool. Wow. We're going pretty quick. David, how about you?
I'm trying to think. Overall, most of this stuff, I've just been continuing on with the Destinies and the No Man's Skies and stuff like that. But probably more relevant to whatever, more interesting anyways, is I picked up Monster Hunter Rise on the Steam sale.
Oh, yeah. They did put that on Steam, didn't they?
Yeah. So this is one, it was on Switch, I think, exclusively, and was kind of the Switch, pseudo-sequel to Monster Hunter World. And yeah, it's now on PC. It seems like, from what I've seen so far, its main thing seems to be that it's very kind of Japanese ninja themed.
Yeah.
Which I don't think they've ever... I think all the others have been either like pseudo tribal caveman or kind of steampunk medieval.
Hmm.
But this one is, you know, very, very, I don't know what I'd call like ninja punk or bamboo punk, the sort of thing where it's like, we have advanced technology, but we're going to pretend it's just ninja gadgets. So probably my favorite manifestation of that so far is the Palicos, are your little humanoid cat companions that are just endlessly adorable. And, you know, when you're not on a mission, you can basically just go around town and, you know, see them along with the other townspeople, you know, working random jobs. And when you go to the training area, there's this like giant animatronic monster that is being controlled on the top by a Palico, like flipping switches and stuff like that.
like Kate Sith from Final Fantasy VII?
Maybe. So that's, you know, just very adorable. The one of the big things that at least World had, I don't know if that was the first one to do it, but really emphasizing, you know, before each hunt, you eat a meal, and just really leaning into the food porn.
Yeah. Well, the meal you choose determines stats, right? So that's part of the prep. Yeah.
Yeah, it determines both the stat bonuses you get, and then there's also different perks it gives you. So, like, being more resistant to knockdowns, or sometimes when you harvest a resource, you can harvest it twice, stuff like that.
Hmm.
And this time around, the food item is what they call a bunny dango.
Okay.
Or dango or something.
Mature.
Yes. As I understand it, it's those weird like rice balls on a skewer that you see in every anime.
Okay.
Except it's got two skewers and the top rice ball has eyes and a mouth on it, so that it looks like bunny ears.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And then the way it works is, instead of picking the ingredients, you're picking which three rice balls you want on this gear.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it just continues to be adorable because there's, you know, little palicos with ginormous mallets just like, kneading the dough and stuff. And it's a lot of fun. The other... new feature, you now, in addition to your palico, you now have a palmute, which is
a palamute, like a malamute, like the dog.
Yes. except your pal and a mutt.
Does it talk?
It cannot talk. It can only bark. The palicos can talk. The palmutes cannot. Palamuts cannot. So, but they can, you can ride on them to go super fast. Somehow they can climb up walls. I'm not quite sure how that happens. And they have, these like double bladed swords that they hold in their mouth to fight enemies.
Oh, like Sif. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it's, again, very adorable. Mine is just super, super derpy. It's got, I don't know, like the sort of pointy wolf ears, except sticking straight up. So that, you know, it's just kind of bobbing around, you know, living its best good boy life.
Yeah. So I mean, like the Palamute running up the walls, like this is also the one that's like a grappling hook. Like you've got a grapple bug.
Like this. Yeah. So the previous game had just a little, I believe, of, you know, areas where there would be like grapple targets, you know, almost like a hook shot type of thing.
Yeah.
But this one, it's much more extensive in that, you know, you can use them anywhere to get, you know, basically to get kind of a super jump. And then you can use them in combat to like launch yourself and attempt to ride on the enemy, sort of a halfway between Rodeo, Bucking Bronco, and Shadow of the Colossus.
Okay.
And then I think I haven't experimented with them much, but I think you can also do things to like tangle them up and, you know, that sort of thing.
Do like a add-on Hoth kind of thing.
Yeah. And, you know, with the graphics, it's definitely trying to, trying to draw in some of the kind of ninja, you know, monofilament assassin wire type of look.
Okay.
So yeah, that's it. Unfortunately, I can't say a whole lot about it because Monster Hunter is famous for just kind of throwing you in the deep end.
Yeah.
And so I was about 2.5 hours in before I even started my first mission.
Good God.
Part of that is because I had to go and speak to every kitty in town and see what bespoke dialogue it had.
So this wasn't like a straight up requirement that it had for you?
No. It still would have taken a while because there is a lot to, you know, get into.
Yeah.
But it would not have taken quite that long.
Yeah. I forget, did you play the Monster Hunter World? Were you a big into
I
that?
Did. I didn't play the expansion.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. No, I just, that is a series that I'm just kind of committed to just, here's me waving merrily. Bye. See ya. I know you're saying I should hop on. No, I'm not gonna. You have fun though. I'm just waving. Bye.
I mean, you could create a Greta Palico. I'm just saying.
I mean, the idea is tempting, but also it's attached to a game that doesn't want me to learn it.
I mean,
Cole has a Greta Palico. It's called Greta.
Yeah,
that is true. yeah, it's getting better. You know, it's but yeah, it definitely has a lot that it could stand to learn. I mean, probably my biggest thing that I wish it had, honestly, is I wish they would add a lock-on a la Dark Souls.
Yeah. Oh, they don't have that? Really?
No. My understanding is I think that's the thing, that the fact that I want that makes me a scrub, and they'll probably never add it because it would enrage longtime fans.
That's not a good reason to do anything.
Yep.
So you support a difficulty setting on Dark Souls then?
No, I support good controls.
Oh, I was trying to call out Cole.
No. Right. I've got no opinion on a difficulty setting in Dark Souls. There are lots of ways to adjust the difficulty of those games. Varies by game, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, nice. Monster Hunter Rise. Like, yep. Like, does it look like it was always a Switch game, or have they like updated the graphics to the point where like it doesn't look weird and featureless on a modern computer?
So I would say I'm not sure, honestly, if how it looks compared to the other. I will say the biggest thing I'm probably disappointed in is the levels are dramatically smaller.
Okay.
They do still have kind of the open world, and you know, they do a really good job of having a lot of verticality. However, they still are just not nearly as sprawling as they were in world.
Yeah.
So, you know, not awful, but still kind of disappointing.
Yeah, that's a shame. Hmm. So, Monster Hunter Rise.
Yep, that's all I've got.
Cool. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I only have a few small ones also tied to the Steam Summer Sale that's going on right now. So I picked up two small games. The first one I picked up was a game called Dorf Romantic. It is a tiny, cozy puzzle ? Game. It feels kind of board gamey in a sense. It's basically a hexagon grid, and you're given a stack of tiles to place, and the tiles have different like terrains on them.
Okay.
Like either like city, field, forest, or like farmland. So it kind of feels kind of like Settlers in a bit, but on a single hex you have multiple different terrain types.
Yeah.
And you start placing them on a grid, and the grid expands as you place them. And you're basically going for like a high score where you're trying to place the world so that everything lines up and makes sense. You don't have to, but you get like a higher score if you do.
Mm-hmm.
And then the way it kind of evolves is like based on whatever type it is, there might be conditions on it. Like if you place down like a hex that has like a single like building on it, you'll be given like this mini mission of like make a city that has like 10 buildings in it.
Yeah.
And so as you're placing tiles, if you can achieve that, what you're rewarded with is you get more tiles added onto your stack. So basically you can go for longer and get like a higher score.
Yeah.
And then the entire time it's just very like serene and calming, like music played in the background. I believe this is made by German developers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made in Unity. It's a very polished game. It's very cute. And there's different game modes you can play where it's like unlimited or very limited or like hard mode, yeah. That sort of thing. And it evolves a little bit beyond that too. There's like tiles that'll come up that have like rivers or railroad tracks on it, that kind of have more strict rules about where you can place them.
Yeah.
And you start to unlock structures as well. So like if you make a long enough river, you unlock like this like river hub, like in a river train or something on it that I don't know, adds to the points or whatever. I don't really know how I feel about this game. I mean, I played it only for maybe an hour or two. It's very calming and very relaxing.
Yeah.
And it has a good game feel, I guess, if you want to think about that. But I'm not sure if there's much of like a, not that a game needs to be addictive or anything, but I'm not sure if there's like kind of a quality that makes me want to like go back and play it. Like, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do outside of just like enjoy the experience. I mean, I think if, maybe if I was more understanding of like maybe the more intricate strategies or more advanced like techniques,
yeah,
maybe I'd be slightly more interested, or maybe if I was more into high score games, I'd be more interested in this, but,
I think it'd be cool if there was a way to like share your city or like have everyone start from the same seed on a given day, and then you could share the way yours played out versus someone else's played out. I'd be curious to see that.
I'm pretty sure they do have something like that, like a daily challenge map.
Nice.
Yeah, and I guess like the ideal situation is everything's like lined up and connecting to one another, and I don't know, everything's like beautiful or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. This is a game that just had pretty high reviews, so I thought I would check it out. And I think it's about $10 on Steam right now with the sale.
Yeah.
I've
seen a couple, you know, like a few games like this, and there one that I was kind of interested in when I saw it shown was called Townscaper, which has kind of a, like, a, you know, a similar look. You know, I think like cozy is the agreed upon term for this particular kind of aesthetic. And I kind of bounced off of it enough so that I didn't really even bring it to the show, because it felt less about optimizing space, and it felt way more about like design a town that you think looks cool, which is for somebody, but not for me.
Yeah. Townscaper, I think explicitly they say like, hey, this is an art tool more than a game.
Yeah. And my expectation was not set going into it. There was another one where it was like little like tableaus of like a ruined abandoned city, and you were like growing greenery over it that had very limited interface, and it was hard for me to figure out what it was doing, but I think it was kind of the same deal. This is a thing. It is a kind of thing. And Dwarf Romantic kind of seems like a little bit more of a crunchy kind of thing. A more crunchy version of it. What happens if you like tile yourself into a corner? Can you like rip stuff up and try and refactor it? Or
you can't do that. You'll probably just start over. So like this is like another thing that's kind of weird. So the stack, I think it starts at either like 50 or 75, something like that. If you like wall off, say you have like a field or something, you wall it off before like expanding it sufficiently, you just don't get the bonus, which is adding more tiles to your stack. So it just means the game will end sooner than it does later.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so I guess there's like two things people are going for, is like maybe how long they can play for. And like you can kind of get into this situation where the game's like kind of perpetually like going on, which is actually kind of, I had kind of a negative impression of it, because it's like, I kind of wanted to know when the game would end, and it kind of like, okay, there's another 25. Okay, there's another 25. Like, all right, got to wrap this up.
Yeah. If there's no loss condition, there's no win condition either.
Yeah.
Wow, but, that's deep.
But like, I don't want to like, you know, rain on, or I don't want to criticize this game too heavily. Like, it's a pretty like enjoyable and low stress type game. Yeah, and so if you just want to build like a pretty town, you can do that with this game. And it's, they do have a good tutorial for the game at the beginning, so you know what you're doing by the end of that. So that's good. So it's just,
it's a interesting simple, tiny, oh, game. Sorry, go ahead.
No. What were you going to say?
As you're placing tiles, like you're always adding new tiles if you're building outwards, kind of on the far edge radius. So eventually, if you're successful enough, you'll get a radius big enough that you pretty much have a place to put every tile.
So yeah, it's like there's two options. You can try and build dense, or you can just like go out in a straight line if you wanted to and like build all the way out there. But you get more points if you're like more things are adjacent to one another. And I think it's something very simple where it's like, you know, 10 points for every edge that exactly lines up with the things around it. And I think you get a bonus on top of that if you line up all six, like, so something's perfectly surrounded by tiles. So it kind of like the score is what kind of incentivizes you to build more densely than just going out in a direction. But you can certainly do that if you don't have any moves. You can also screw yourself over if you like, I don't know, just set the map up in maybe a tough way or an incorrect way. But all right. I got one more outside of that one.
Okay.
Another game I got on the Steam summer sale is called Before Your Eyes. And this is another small game that I kind of seen about. It kind of had high reviews, so I thought I would check it out. But it is a game where it has a unique mechanic where it has webcam integration. And what it does with a webcam is it'll recognize when you blink your eyes. And what the game is the game's almost like just a story or almost like a narrative. There's very little game mechanics in it. And it feels similar to like a Pixar type movie, because it's like one of these things where it's like talking about life. But it's the premise of it is you wake up, you're on a ship with a figure that you don't exactly know who they are, but they kind of look kind of like a dog or a wolf maybe. And they say that you're special, and they say that you're going to go to this tower and you get vibes like it's like the, like an Undertaker type situation, like the boat, the ferryman, like taking you across the river. And they say that they are a storyteller and that they need to tell a good story from your life. So they're going to run through the history of your entire life. in real time to try and find a good narrative there. And the way that, and so that's the opening of the game. And then it puts you in the game, and it starts off and you're in a scene and you're like a child or like a baby, an infant, you know? And then what happens is in the game, it'll, you know, you'll see some sort of scene and then a prompt will come up. And basically the next time you blinked, if that prompt is up, it'll take you forward in the future. And it might be like a week, it might be a month, it might be multiple years, but it'll skip some amount of time. And the weird game mechanic of it is you can try to not blink if you want to stay in that scene longer and see what happens, like see how it plays out. And it's possible in some of the scenes that you might get some extra content if that happens, like the prompt for blinking will go away and then you'll hear more dialogue and you might have another interaction and it might change the narrative of the course of your life as well. You might, you might have some new prompt that you wouldn't have had before. Sometimes this
literally very often, blink and you'll miss it.
Yes. But very often the, it's, you know, the scene's just over and you, it, you can tell, and then you just blink and go on. So the norm
or
is
you
just,
haven't waited long enough. Just
It could be. There is an achievement called like Eyes of Steel if you don't blink for a very long time, which I was able to do on one of the scenes.
Or but, or if you have, you know, an assistant who will mist you occasionally.
Yeah. If you got a Clockwork Orange situation set up at your home, then yeah.
Oh man, I mean, who does mist meta dropping.
Yeah, so this is like a very unique mechanic. The game itself and the story itself, it's like hit or miss. Some of the beats are interesting. Some of them are a little bit hokey and some of them are a little bit overdone. But it's a short game. I think it's only a 2-hour game and I've only played like an hour of it. So I'm like halfway through. Yeah, so it's unique. I think with the Steam sale, it was somewhere between like $5 and $10. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I would say like rush out and buy it or not, but it's something it's an experience I haven't had before. So at least there's that.
I mean, points on them for trying something new. Like I never would have thought of that. Like based on just the, you know, 2-sentence description, I would have thought like it was like try and avoid pulling a click on yourself, you know, like, okay, the more you blink, you advance, you advance forward. So don't blink a lot or the life will be over. This sounds a little bit more intricate than that.
Yeah. And this is a game where I might go back and play it a second time just to see, like what all the different choices are and see like how railroaded you are. But there definitely seem to be a few parts where it's very like binary decisions where it's like, hey, do you want to go to bed so that you do well on a test tomorrow? Or do you want to go like sneak out with friends or whatever? And you pay the consequence of whichever one you do.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
How was there never a blinking centric game in the days of Kinect?
I think that would require people who have played Kinect games.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, I don't know if the Kinect could actually sense it that far away. I think a webcam.
Interesting.
Well, wasn't Kinect just like skeletal tracking?
It was like a real basic form of LiDAR, I think is what it was. Like it had the IR, like the IR scatter shot kind of thing to it.
Maybe they tried to make it, but you had to Han Solo pose every time to advance the scene, and people just couldn't connect with it.
Yeah.
Well, there's also like the PlayStation camera has been around. Like this it's always interesting. Like a really great idea feels obvious in hindsight, and I think this is one of those things.
Like this feels like one of those things. Like back in the old E3 days, you would always want to read about like what was shown in. It was like a portion of the event center called Kentia Hall or Kentia Hall, where it was like the cheap seats, but that was almost always where like the really like offbeat kind of stuff was. Like that's where Guitar Hero showed for the first time. That's where Harmonix was like, okay, we've got this PS2 game that you play with a plastic guitar. How wacky, ha ha ha. And then it turned out to be this massive deal. This feels like something that would have come out of that.
Yeah, it also kind of feels like a game jam type of game where it's like some sort of prompt, like where it's like, okay, let's try this out. But I don't know how much tech it takes, or I don't know how like what it would take programming side to like register blinks or whatever. To their credit, they do say up front like, hey, like, we only record, this is only stored locally on your computer. We don't do anything with this information. So yeah. Like, that all seems on the up and up at least, but yeah.
Hey, face recognition stuff has been established for iPhone for a while, but, you know, for better and worse.
Yeah.
But I have to imagine there's some kind of API or some, you know, knowledge there that can be tapped into.
Yeah, and I guess that's the piece I'm not sure if because I don't know if like Unity or Unreal Engine like has some sort of plugin where it'll do this sort of thing for you, or if they had to homebrew it. But
yeah.
And they use it in another case too, where it's like you can use Blink to select objects in the world too. So it's, that part is also kind of cool to have it as a game mechanic.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, definitely the unique experience is when there's a scene that you are attached to and you really want to stay in it. And you're not sure when the prompt is going to start to come up, where if as soon as you blink, it'll like advance you or whatever. So there's like a lot of moments where, yeah, you try and keep your eyes open like very long. And then another thing I found out is if you just shut your eyes, it'll count as like a continuous blink. So you can't like refresh or anything. Yeah.
What happens if you close one eye and then close the other?
Closing one eye counts as a blink. So winking counts as blinks in this game.
So gotcha. What if how you flirt? Just at the start just blink like 30 times, just blink, 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 blink.
You're dead.
Well, so the prompt will come up. So you might like some of the scene you might have a minute of the scene where there's nothing, like when you blink, it doesn't do anything. But there's like literally like a metronome that'll come up. And then as soon as that comes up, you're basically live, or if you blink, it'll advance the scene.
Gotcha.
Wow.
And so again,
this
that can
seems like it's begging to be in VR.
Yeah, it probably could be. I mean, it could have the same, I don't know. It could have the same problem with like other games too, where it's like, cause you're in a, you know, it's, you're in a fixed camera here where it's like your mouse will just swivel around and stuff. And so I don't know. It might not work in VR if the graphics are done a certain way, or it's like,
yeah,
you know, you're in the backseat of a car. If you try and look your head forward, there might not be anything there art asset wise. So,
I mean, when has not working in VR ever stopped anyone?
Fair point. Yeah. Anyway, it's a cute little game. I'll probably finish it off sometime in the next week and see what there is to see. But yeah.
Nice. Yeah, okay. This is what I was thinking of. There is, on the PSVR 2, there's going to be an internal IR camera for eye tracking per eye.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
That would be possible if they're willing to put in the artwork for it.
Who knows?
/ able.
Nice. Bunch of weird ones this week. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Was that all you had, Ben?
That's all I got.
All right. Bunch of weird ones this week. I like it.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, everyone has been having fun dunking on Diablo Immortal this week over just the ridiculous amount of money it takes to progress in their end game. And so I figured we might as well shine a spotlight on good examples of endgame instead. So, what games have the coolest endgame content defined as content after the main story or campaign has been finished?
Yeah. And I'll get us started here with Greg, who says, I'm taking this question to mean which games have the best DLC that came out after the game release? And are also designed to be done with high level characters after you finish the main story. It's not possible for me to say just one game. The Mass Effect, Elder Scrolls, and Fallout games all have some amazing DLC for them that really extend the playing time, and are a good bang for your buck and what you paid for them, and some bad DLC also, but that's par for the course.
Yeah, I guess most DLC is oriented towards endgame. I'm trying to remember if there's ever been a game that has come out with DLC that's like, nope, you're supposed to get to this, you know, first or in the middle or you know, before you've seen all of the.
I believe one of the Tomb Raider games had DLC that was like right in the middle of the game.
Yeah.
Wasn't that also the issue with Dark Souls?
Yeah, I mean, Dark Souls, because when you beat the game, at least Dark Souls 1, it'll force you into a new cycle. Getting to the Artorias content, you're meant to do that when you are doing the Lord Vessel stuff. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. And then, like, the Deus Ex, like, they had a whole, like, chapter that was missing from the game, like that, that was put in as DLC. Also, they did that with, I'm thinking here, Assassin's Creed 2 had that as well. just little sequences that were put in.
Yeah, that's basically interesting, because I see that those two specifically as games that try to have, like, you know, your choices in one place affect what you see in another. Mm-hmm. And so I can't imagine the complexity of adding something in. Like, you'd have to keep it very carefully sealed off.
It's really sealed off, at least in mm-hmm. Deus Ex's case. Yeah.
Also, for you, Dennis, isn't that kind of how XCOM works, that they add an expansion that just becomes the right way to play the game?
Yeah, that is very true. And that is even goes as far as to, like, changing the tutorial. So,
yeah,
that is absolutely their approach, mm-hmm. for better and for worse.
Yeah. Ben, what does Jeff say?
Jeff says, is it cheating to call Sonic Adventure 2's Chaos Garden an endgame? You unlock more stuff by completing side missions, only available after the story mode, and grind for stats and items and animals to give your buddies so they can compete in higher difficulty races and karate fights. Who knew the best reward for a Sonic platformer endgame would be a baby management sim?
I think it's not a misspelling of chaos. I think it's literally a chow.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No,
chow,
it is.
Garden, so.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't going to correct you. I think anybody who listened knew what you meant. I forget that. I was more into the chow raising in Sonic Adventure 1.
Yeah, I really wish that they would somehow make visual memory units be a thing again.
Man, I love those things.
Mm.
Sneaking those into bands and putting them right on the stand next to the sheet music. Yeah, yep. Good shit. Man. Let's see here. David, what does Callum say?
Callum says, I'm not normally one for endgame. The one exception I can think of is Resident Evil 5. I put that down to how fun it was to replay co-op and how enjoyable it was to upgrade the guns.
Yeah, it's almost like I think that might be a New Game Plus thing. So you're just going and getting the resources to do mega upgrades.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and that's I think also the one where you can get like a chain gun and stuff.
Yeah, you can go wild with RE5. Dennis, what does Patrick say?
Patrick says Final Fantasy. Oh no, Roman numerals
14.
Yay! Oh, the big one. Final Fantasy 14 has the Hildebrand story in almost every expansion that appears in one of the first patches. They are fun, short side adventures that are mostly comedy and include many wacky hijinks. The stories give us fights with previous Final Fantasy enemies, including Ultros and Greg, otherwise known as Gilgamesh, but I like Greg better. Always good for a laugh, especially after the really heavy and serious story in the latest expansion.
It's really funny that Final Fantasy XIV expansions feature anime filler episodes.
Very appropriate. I mean, they've got the cat people. It's true. Anime as hell.
I'm not even saying that as a dig.
No, let me some cat
you
person.
Ever
that's what I played as.
Crazy. Whatever the road trip Final Fantasy, check out their Assassin's Creed crossover sometime.
They did a bunch of crazy crossovers with that, didn't they?
Yeah, there was a Nier one, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that makes sense. Same company. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy writes, I played WoW, World of Warcraft, for 5 years, and I always enjoyed the endgame content. From regular WoW to Wrath of the Lich King, dungeons and raids were always a lot of fun. I also really loved the ending of Sekiro. I did the secret true ending on my first playthrough, and even if I did need a walkthrough to get everything right, it was amazing. Especially the last boss, a culmination of all that we learned in an epic battle to the death.
Is there a way to tell anything about the last boss without, like, spoiling all the things?
You get the same last... Okay. there is one particular ending that you get that, like, shunts you into, like, a weird little side path where the last boss is different. The ending that Jeremy is talking about, I believe, and, like, all of the, like, the three best endings that you get... Those all feature the same last boss, the one that people talk about the most often.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
Sekiro had specifically a boss rush mode, right?
That was added in DLC, okay. About a year after release. Yeah.
That counts. That's good endgame content right there.
Yeah.
I mean, people mostly play that game for the bosses anyway. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
So did any of you guys do any raiding in World of Warcraft?
Oh, God, no.
So I never actually raided. However, I had a friend who was super into it. And once the raids were just ludicrously out of date, such that he could solo them, he would just like take me along through them.
Yeah. Nice.
And yeah, there are some pretty amazing raids in that. I mean, full on, you know, set pieces with like, I don't know, like demonic enemies like flying in from the horizon to, you know, attack your party and stuff. Like, they're actually pretty cinematic.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I was never down with scheduling something and being at a place at a time for other people. So raiding was never.
It's not always user friendly.
So one of my roommates freshman year was hyper into World of Warcraft, and I don't know if you guys remember this guy. We obviously won't say his name, but hyper into it. That's all he did. And I think like, you know, missed classes and
didn't he threaten to cut you if you interrupted his play?
Well, that's, you know, kind of joking. One of my other roommates was like, so what would you do if we like flipped the breaker while you were in the middle of a raid? And he turned around and like made eye contact. This is like one of the only times he made like really steady eye contact with anyone. And he goes, I would kill you. He turned back to his screen and we did not mess with him.
I want to point out that this was not told to me at the time that I was DRA, you guys.
But yeah, so that is the closest I've gotten to raiding.
Yeah, was just proximity to the act.
Yeah, and the threat of mortal punishment should I interrupt the act.
Yeah. Huh. Well. That is concerning, and I really hope that that person got what they needed.
Me too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what they needed was probably not a college degree.
I don't know.
Well, they were in like a nuclear physics program or something like that. Like they were smart, but I think they eventually like changed majors to music, something like that, so they would have more time for raiding.
Yeah. Jeremy, do not feel bad for needing to look up a walkthrough to get that best ending. It is really difficult. It is the stuff you have to do is wild. round us out here, Ben, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says, Dragon Quest XI rolls credits some 60 hours into the adventure after you defeat the big bad at great cost. Afterwards, there's easily another 20 hours of story content covering the aftermath of the battle, the effect of the various character deaths on the rest of the group, and how your characters are able to recover from everything. In TV terms, credits roll at the end of season one, and then you get an abbreviated second season before the game ends. Hmm. Of course, this is all done in typical over-the-top JRPG fashion, but it's a nice coda to the adventure.
So it sounds like a less unsatisfying Metal Gear Solid 5. Yeah,
I really like this format, and I think it's something that games are pretty uniquely suited to explore.
Mm-hmm.
Like put a lot of action in that falling action.
Yeah, why not? my example for this, so it's not going to be like after the story content happens, but it is alongside, like you're going to be way over leveled for the main content by the time you go and do this stuff. Final Fantasy XII does a really good job of kind of mimicking MMO encounter design. With a single player, you know, because you have this automated party running the gambit system, so you can do kind of these big encounters managing the whole team as opposed to just a single person. And so like there are whole challenge dungeons and whole hunts that you do. Hunts are like, you know, particular like you're hunting monsters kind of missions.
You're a monster hunter.
Imagine if you will. You are, yes. I've never done like the big one that takes like, you know, 17 hours to do if you're not fast forwarding, but like some of those dungeons are really cool, and like going and getting all of the summons is satisfying in a way that like that is the that and Morrowind are the closest that I've ever felt to like playing EverQuest in a game that was made to be a single player. Yeah. Ben, how about you?
So, I mean, this is a game I really like. I would say The Witness is my answer because that was a game that I thought I had beaten, and there was at least one or two endings that I had not found. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot after what you think the game is.
Oh, yeah. David, how about you?
I'd say probably BioShock Infinite, where, you know, the DLC for that, I think, really make the game, and a lot of the game just isn't coherent without it.
Yeah.
I don't know if this counts as endgame or mid-game or whatever, but also Bloodborne is another game that, like, I just can't imagine playing without the DLC.
Yeah, in terms of, like, I mean, it doesn't answer questions that you had about the main game, if I'm being honest, but it fills some of the holes with things that are shaped like the answers that you might be looking for. Yeah.
That's the most Dark Souls thing I've ever heard.
From has a real problem with, let's say, focus sometimes. oftentimes they'll have like four or five different things functionally fulfill the same role in a narrative, and it's just, you just have to roll with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, the one that came to mind for me was Super Mario Odyssey. So you can see every world and kind of beat the final boss fairly easily, but then the real game is trying to collect all the moons, and like all the worlds kind of get mashed up, like characters from all the different worlds start showing up in other worlds, portals between worlds open up that let you get to places that you hadn't been. And in general, like when you see credits for the first time, you are just getting started.
Yeah. That's a good one. Like lots of Mario games do that, where like the main campaign is a little bit like, okay, this is the obvious stuff. Now for the real stuff that is going to like test your ability to use this moveset, stick around. Yeah, that's a great answer.
Yeah, they also just like really obscure, crazy puzzle stuff, like more advanced platforming for sure. But then it's just like almost stuff you have to look up a guide for. In terms of like, hey, go here and you know, stand still for 10 seconds or what have you. Like, there's just crazy stuff in there, which, you know, it feels like they have a little more permission to do since it is past the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, lots of interesting stuff. Also, that opens up multiplayer when you finish the game.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a super weird thing to think about a prime Mario game having, but it's in there. It's in there.
Nice. Not bad. Well, thank you everybody for writing in, liked your answers. If you would like to participate in the future, go to Patreon. Nope, sorry, wrong URL. Go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you for posting this one, Dennis.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they could get a Patreon and then they could become a part of the Slack.
True.
And then they could get the questions there if they wanted to.
I promote that at the end sometimes.
Now we're promoting in the middle. Go no, get on the Patreon. It's awesome.
I hate it. All right.
I'm saying it, so it's okay.
Pound that like button.
Guys, I don't think we're going to make it as modern influencers.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. I've got one here at the start. This was actually just earlier here today. Took place at the Nintendo Direct that just happened here. Lots of things were shown, including some stuff that I haven't had the time to watch the previews for the trailers and stuff. But the one that I was kind of expecting might happen, but I'm happy is that Persona 3, 4, and 5 are coming to the Switch, which really felt like a no duh kind of thing to me. Persona 4, you know, was popular on the PS2, but I think that most people probably experienced it on the PS Vita. Like, it was the killer app for that. And any JRPG now, if it does not have a portable version, what in the world are you doing? The fact that these are going to be coming out you know, better late than never. But their releases are going to be kind of coinciding with the other updated re-releases and the PC releases coming along later this year. So I thought that was cool.
So just a, is it just me thing? Like, I just despise the character design to Persona.
I mean, taste is taste.
Do you like any anime at all? Or is that part
yeah.
of...
Okay. Yeah, no, I generally like anime. I don't know, just the...
Like the specific style, is that...
Yeah, just, I don't know, if you like took the hipster slider and slid it to the right and then broke off the knob.
I mean, if you did that, like you go, like you sail straight past Persona into like the World Ends With You stuff, like into like weird, crazy fashion stuff. I'm sure somebody else feels that way. I can't answer for them. Yeah. You were going to ask something, Dennis, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say that this might actually get me to try a Persona because I've completely missed the series.
Yeah.
And kind of like you in Monster Hunter, knowing that this will eat your life alive if you're actually going to invest in it.
Yeah.
But, you know, having it on a portable system like this that is actually out in my house might be a good excuse to check it out.
Yeah. Dennis, we'll go to yours because that was another Nintendo announcement. What's happening with them Wascally Wabbits?
Yeah, don't call them rabbits because that's not what they trademarked. Mario and Rabbids is getting a sequel, and that was announced a while ago, but we now have a launch date for it. And some new details about the gameplay. So Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope is the new game in that series. And that is the Mario turn-based strategy game, Mario plus XCOM, if you will, that notoriously is a fun, cutesy game, but insanely difficult at the same time. I remember rage quitting this because I could not do it. I've got my eyes on the sequel, but the cool thing that they're doing with this is mixing up how you move around the world. And that's something that I really appreciated about the first game was the way that they made movement much more than just a point to point thing.
Okay.
Like, you know, it was worked into different things you could do while you were moving or, you know, jumping off of friends, you know, tripping enemies. There was a whole lot of interesting stuff on that, but it still played out on a grid. Well, in this second one, the grid has been taken away while you're moving, and you can kind of freely run around within a radius, as much as you want during your turn.
Huh.
Which is a really interesting idea. At first blush, it feels overpowered because movement in turn-based strategy games has always been tied to like X number of squares, and you go, you know, that many squares, and then you're done. And so to be like, no, just run around for as long as you like, as much as you like, feels crazy. Mm-hmm. But you know that you know there are some things you can do while running, like I said, tripping enemies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But eventually you're going to have to stop and, you know, take a position before you can attack for real.
Yeah.
And I think that still, you know, pins you down, and keeps it from going too crazy, but I'll be excited to see all the ways they play with it. Already in the demo, they showed like, you know, if you kill one enemy by tripping it like a bomb, you can then pick it up and throw it at another group so that when you go into the attack phase, that will explode and do like area of effect on the group. So like, that's really cool. And I could see them having a lot of interesting things playing with this movement. So it's interesting to find this or see this find its niche within turn-based strategy games. And I like the way that's going to mix things up.
Yeah.
So, will there be a Rabbidette?
There will be a Rabbid Rosalina.
Okay.
Close enough.
That was one of the announcements. And I think that ties into the gameplay somehow. So they're showing off Rabbid Rosalina. Everyone seems to have one of her little star dudes. It almost looks like a, you know, equip a unique passive kind of deal, or like, you know, an extra power, which has me intrigued. The rabid version of her is painted as just always being very sleepy, which is funny.
Well, yeah.
And then at the very end of the trailer, they showed that you will be able to play as Bowser as well, which is new for this game. So that's cool. And it's, you know, I'm always amused by games where Bowser and Mario are on the same team.
Yeah.
They seem to do that more and more.
I'm looking at this, and so I guess there's another Rabbids, like, mainline, whatever you consider mainline. There's like a Rabbids game, like a party game coming out in 2022, but like, the Mario and Rabbids game is kind of the only movement that series has had in 8 years, it looks like. So
yeah, I mean, the most recent Rabbids things I saw was a little like VR installation at our local arcade.
Yeah,
that had like a little you know, pseudo roller coaster VR ride.
Yeah,
that's all we've gotten in a while.
I just. The part of me that just hates humanity and loves the forces of chaos wants them to do a Rabbids Minions crossover.
that's the trick, is they're the same thing. Also, apparently there was DLC for the first, for Kingdom Battle, the first game.
Yeah,
in the series.
There was a Donkey Kong one. Yeah,
I had no idea. So I've got something new to play now.
Hmm. Let's see here. David, what's going on up in Quebec?
Yeah, so Quebec is the center, apparently, of Canada's video game industry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Canada actually has a fairly happening video game industry. That's why it's a bunch of, I think it's Ubisoft's there, right?
Yeah, Ubisoft Montreal is their main kind of place. Yeah.
Yeah. However, the government of Quebec has passed a law that everyone who moves there has 6 months to learn French. And then after that point, you can't get any government services in English anymore.
How do they govern that? As do they just like slap your hand if you reach for the English menu, a gem in your hand turns red?
I think it's like if you call or like go in, you know, to the DMV or whatever, they can simply not serve you.
But this implies that you have to have all of the materials in English for those people in the grace period. So yeah. Why wouldn't you just continue giving them to people?
Basically, they're butthurt that people don't want to learn French.
I've got my gut reaction, my reflex is to be annoyed by this. I don't know enough about the history of this particular struggle, other than it always seems like Quebec is trying to separate, and there seems to be something that really approaches like a let's say pugnacious nationalism to it that that I inherently reject. So this whole like, you know, learn our language, love it or leave it kind of thing is not a good look on anyone.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just glad that I'm mainly bringing this story just to be like, it's not only America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there's like some kind of like anti-colonial like basis for this, I'm willing to admit that I'm wrong. It's just, yeah, it's a, I don't care for that one bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's not English, but it still feels like punching down.
Yeah.
I don't think English or French speaking people can really claim to be the victims of anything colonial in North America.
Yeah, so. That's the thing. It's like a counter thing. I've got no idea. Do they get no clue? So
let's blame hipsters.
Yeah. So the main thing though that makes this relevant to this podcast, as opposed to, you know, me just trying to distract from our own misery, is the fact that this could really inhibit hiring there.
Yeah. I mean,
in general, xenophobia, not great for your country.
Nope.
Isolationism, not great for your country.
Yeah. And there are already like really stringent, you know, laws. Like they basically have to prove that it's impossible to hire a Canadian to fill that job before they bring in an American or anybody else to fill it.
Oh, huh.
Not that I've been looking at, you know, expatriation, but
yeah, I know around, I know in America, it's supposed to be that way for the H-1 visa. Although I saw one of the places I was working, offers they made, and it was for like, you know, double digits, thousands of dollars less than market rate.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, technically you looked for other people.
Hopefully people who are already there. I mean, God, those jobs are already so insecure anyway. Like, hopefully that doesn't like upend them. If they've been living there and they aren't sufficiently French speaking enough. Yeah.
I feel like video game programmers are like the teachers within the video game world, where it's like, God bless them. They're just like, they don't teach. they're doing it because of their passion. They're doing the Lord's work. You know,
you can make more money doing literally anything else, except maybe some government jobs.
Yeah.
We're veering into depressing again. I don't want to veer into depressing. Uplift me, Ben. What is happening with games going quick?
I don't think I did that. Mine is literally just saying that Steam has a summer sale.
Oh, okay. That graphic looked very similar to AGDQ, which is going on this week. So that'll teach me.
Is that this week?
Yes. That'll teach me to read the words as opposed to just looking at the splat screen.
We already established I don't read words with Chaos Zone or whatever. No, this was just literally just saying, but we already kind of covered it with what games we're playing, that Steam summer sale is the thing. It's running up until July 7th, so it seems like there's a good amount of games that are on pretty good discounts, so at least looking through my wish list. So
I'm gonna hold off on looking at my wish list until it's right near the end, that way I don't make any impulsive decisions, you know, because if I say to myself, oh, I can just grab a couple now and be done with it, I'll do that exact same thing a couple of times as opposed to like one big go at the end.
See, I find that waiting to the last minute does not make me make less impulsive decisions.
I think he's saying he only wants to make one impulsive decision and not multiple impulsive decisions.
He's controlling the quantity, not the quality.
So even if that last one is slightly bigger than any of the multiple ones, I'm counting on the fact that I'm only doing one to make for like a net gain on my part.
I forget now, Cole or anyone else, have you picked up a Steam Deck?
No.
Picked up a what?
Steam Deck.
And I forget, that's not the thing that helps you stream. That's the thing that is like a Switch.
Yeah. It's the handheld computer. I didn't get a pre-order in. I put the $5 down to get notified when pre-orders are available because I've seen enough cool stuff and figure that'd probably be neat to have. But no, I do not have one.
Okay, I was gonna say this sale is probably the right time to kind of load up on games for that.
Yes.
Yeah. So the first time around the sale circle with the Steam Deck out.
Yeah.
Does it share with PC, the Steam Deck?
Yeah. There are tons of games. Like if you go and look, like games will advertise if they're Steam certified, like in a ton of them are. So
gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. They've talked about like doubling the manufacturing and shipping. So who knows? Sweet. Well, that sounds like a show. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Button it.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 420. We really appreciate you taking the time. Reminder, no show next week, just because of 4th of July stuff. If you're in America, I'm so sorry. If you're not, have a good week.
And, I'm so sorry.
We're so sorry about not having a show.
Regardless, everybody have a good time. If you want to help the show, you can do things like go to the Patreon. You can leave a rating or review in Apple Podcasts or whichever directory you prefer. And tell your friends. I was about to say come back next week, but I just told you not to. So is there anything I'm forgetting?
No, at me if you're coming to Gen Con.
When is Gen Con?
August 4th through the 8th, I think.
So all right. Out in Indianapolis, Indiana. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Twitter at Deck of Wonders with underscores between the words.
I've been David Meisweth.
I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. I only have one. It's from toward the beginning. I little brother myself. Yeah.
That's not bad.
I only had one also from the beginning. It was God Drift.
Yep. Yep, I've got God Drift as well.
Okay.
Then I also have Let's Blame Hipsters as a late entry.
Okay. Ben, what you got?
I have nothing.
Okay. By laughs, I think it was I little brother myself.
Yeah, that ain't bad.
How do we feel about that over God Drift?
I'm giving a thumbs up.
Okay. Sure. Cool.
Oh, here's another depressing story I could have done. Apparently the most wishlisted game for Steam is asking developers to volunteer to work on the game for free.
Ooh.
But... ooh.
Wait, what?
The game that is most wishlisted and therefore has like the highest expressed interest in purchasing is looking for free labor.
Yep. It's apparently the day before.
Ugh. I don't like that. What I do like is that we settle on a title and it is decided.